Muddletown, a self-help guide for those struggling through the tribulation, by Christian Lovegren. For more, visit muddletown.com. Chapter 1, I Fall Down.
I am the image of a frail old man, falling to the ground in slow motion. I send dust and ashes to flight.
I would mutter this over and over as I resigned myself to live my life in the wet grass with vomit on the jacket that I had owned since the 7th grade. Just then, God handed me another onslaught. The world spun, and again I unhinged from reality. I witnessed the fall of Saddam as I dug my toes into the Iraqi dirt. I knelt in the sands of Israel, once Palestine, once Israel again. I saw Hitler's Germany spread across the globe. I witnessed genocide. Why? Babylon was constructed again and again, torn to rubble and resurrected. Why? I beheld the great behemoth, the dinosaur. The world became a translucent, quivering jewel, and its creatures regressed to the sea where they gyrated about under a blanket of thick black darkness. All the while I pondered. Why? My eyes sharpened as I beheld the creation of my soul. I inhaled. I exhaled. I cried out and grew ancient among my brethren. But where was mine architect? He was nowhere to be found. In his place were four statuesque winged creatures. They became a fascination in my mind and grew oddly familiar as I watched them crouch at each corner of a golden seat. I observed for 1,000 years, and for 1,000 years I called out for answers. But no one took the seat, and no one heeded my call. As my patience gave way, I became increasingly concerned with the subtle gestures of one of the four.
1, 2, 3, 4.
I could see what he was thinking. He alone coveted the seat, and then smartly concealed his eyes. He alone knelt proud and cocky, tall with shoulders square. I heard dissent among my brethren. Their voices eerily reverberated.
He is the most beautiful in creation.
Others expounded.
He is as enchanting as the moon and glistening like the stars. He is trusted, revered, and placed most high.
I gently spoke as I began to violently shake. Have I heard this before? As my hallucinations faded and I grew nearer to consciousness, I saw him draw a map. And the last thing that tumbled from my mind into the dream world was his face, full focus. It had turned from stone to a maniacal, sadistic grin, and I saw him mouth a single word.
Wormwood.
I wearily scraped my way from the ground, and I reminded myself, we're just crazy, that's all. But why couldn't I get that damn word out of my head? Wormwood. Wormwood. When I was 4 years old, my mother would find me off in strange places thinking about God's life. I don't remember a time that I didn't believe in God. I do, however, very clearly remember being the weird kid in school. The one that dreamed dreams. The one that preferred the company of adults. And the one that didn't have a choice but to believe in demons. Because I saw them. And they tried to talk to me. But God taught me how to ignore them. And more importantly, he taught me how to fight. I know how that sounds, but I assure you I'm not a liar. I may be a drunk, an addict, and a ghoul, but a liar I am not. It's just that we don't really have a choice in what we believe. We are all products of what we hear, see, smell, taste, and worst of all, feel. As time went on, the word wormwood grew in my head and I knew I was in trouble. As a child, words would get stuck in my head so bad that they would give me crippling headaches. My mother would ask me what the word was, and then she would proceed to tell me everything she knew about that word until the headache would subside. My poor mother found herself spending half of her time feeding me an entire thesis on words like inimitable and cholesterol. So for my 10th birthday, she gave me a green leather-bound pocket dictionary with my name stamped neatly in gold in the lower right-hand corner of the front cover. The message inside read,
"To my little Asher, take 2 aspirin and read this every day. Love, Mom, XOXO."
My dictionary said that wormwood was something bitter or grievous. It also said that there was a plant named wormwood whose bitter oils are used in absinthe. But that wasn't it. That wasn't what I was looking for. There was something more to it than that. I slipped my dictionary back into the breast pocket of the seventh grade jacket that had vomit on it and sat down under the buzzing orange streetlight. As I sat there, I thought and thought and thought about that word, and as I thought, something terrible crept up my spine and took hold. Just like that, the same wrenching headache was back and worse than it had been in 14 years. So I walked to the corner market to buy some aspirin and call my mom.
The number you have reached.
The phone swung like a pendulum, hitting me in the face every odd second. From down on all fours, I yelled in the direction of the receiver.
Looks like the market is the latest victim of the times. These hard times. That's all right. These blackouts are getting more frequent, and I needed something stronger anyway.
I could hear the concern on the other end of the line.
Where are you, Asher? Where are you, sweetie?
I heaved and shook the last drops of moisture from my body. The concrete rose to the occasion to meet me halfway, and I was out. As the slab embraced my heat, my eyes fluttered and fanciful thoughts took hold hard.
Rise up now. Rise up! Rise up! Come ye with hardness of heart. Come ye whose will shall be done.
A portion of the people cheered with a violence as he speared forth his limestone finger and spilled globs of bile from his lips which soaked his beautiful wings. His architects stood with eyes lowered, heart incised.
We have prevailed,
the rebel insisted, and a third of the masses excited as Wormwood's finger dropped. His face took a reddish hue, and his expression turned to elation of power as the people fell in rank and my view averted to the night sky. A third of the stars in heaven fell at my feet. A third stayed crippled in the cosmos, and the last simply faded.
Wormwood, I shouted. His name is Wormwood, I cried at the receiver as it swung overhead.
Does your brother know where you are? Does he know where you are? Asher, can you hear me?
My head suddenly propped up, and the world repeated 30-fold. Danny knelt next to me, pushed his fake-ass cowboy hat back, and with the buzzing receiver in hand, he echoed.
Who are you talking to this time, Ash?
Mom, I sputtered.
That's real nice, Ash. Real nice. Mom's still dead, you fucking asshole. She's still dead.
Danny let go. I felt a sharp warm split in the back of my head, and I distinctly heard 60 cowboy boots click into the horizon like the horse itself.
Clip-clop. Clip-clop.
Danny hollered from afar.
Come and get a drink when you're done freaking out. Clip-clop. Clip-clop. I gotta admit, drink sounds pretty good right now.
I called out after him. I gathered my senses and clambered to my feet. My jacket whipped in the thick wind, the trench coat that I had owned since the seventh grade. At some point, of course, I outgrew the sleeves, so I cut them off and learned to sew. My punk rock friend showed me how to use carpet nylon and a needle to affix band patches and patches that we made with denim and acrylic paint. If you never wash these kinds of patches, they acquire a sort of patina, like enamel almost. Those were always my favorites, and they covered nearly every inch of me. The only spots that weren't covered with patches were covered with spikes, or studs, or rings, or lighter tops, or bottle caps. Police loved me. I was easy to spot. My hair was chopped into a lovely and discernible pattern of hunks, curls, and waves. The left half was dyed red to represent the fire in my mind, and the right half was dyed green to represent my true nature. I am an artist, a musician, an apostle, and a madman. Around my waist was a girding of chains attached to my belt. They weighed me down and taught me to be silent. My neck and wrists were adorned with spikes and leather and paint. My collar and bracelets were secured with nuts and bolts, and if necessary, would cut or pierce my wandering brothers in the night. If those didn't do the job, my knives would. I was a porcupine, and I would not be harmed.
This is my alley home. These are my slickened streets. This is Muddle, California, and this is my inheritance. This industrial complex, these buzzing orange streetlights, the bugs, the waste, the metal and the asphalt are mine. I have grown with you all and I adore you.
I called this out to the night. My voice bounced off tin siding. It bounced off giant concrete slabs, and it nestled in my alley home. To my right at the end of a long corridor of deep red brick laid my gathering of defective stuffed animals, those that our machines had rejected due to imperfection, piled over the years against the unforgiving walls and pasted with debris.
How you cradle my head. Oh, you stuffing. You soot-soaked stuffing.
To my left was the factory, the entirety of my childhood, and the sweat of my parents.
God only knows what to do with it in these times. These hard times.
People would still come up to me to give their condolences.
He was a great man.
And it was apparent that it was for them.
The wonderful woman.
Not for me. My parents were beacons in the night. My father, a creator of dreams and creatures. My mother, a lioness and captain of industry. My inheritance, a broken toy factory, and the condolences of the community.
And yes, folks, right ahead this way, right this way. The Eighth Plague, ladies and gentlemen.
When you tear a hole, it gets cleansed by blood. When you bury a soul, does it stick in the mud? When you move the mud, does it tear a hole? When the body's destroyed, just what happens to the soul? No one knows.